The War I Finally Won by Kimberly Brubaker Bradley. Read by Nina Copeland. Chapter 1. You can know things all you like, but that doesn't mean you believe them.
Ada, you need to drink something.
Susan's voice scolding. Susan's hands pushing a cup of cold tea into mine.
I don't want to, I said. Really, I don't.
Susan curled my fingers round the teacup.
I understand, she said, but please try. It's the last thing they're going to let you have. You'll be thirsty in the morning.
My right foot was twisted sideways at the ankle. It had been all my life. My ankle bones grew curled, so my toenail scraped the ground and what should have been the bottom of my foot faced the sky. Walking hurt like anything. Despite the calluses, the skin on my foot tore and bled. This night in the hospital, nearly 3 years ago now, was September 16, 1940, a Monday. It was a little over a year into the war between Hitler and most of the rest of the world. 11 years into the war between the rest of the world and me. The very next day, surgeons were going to chop my curled ankle bones up and rearrange them, maybe into something like a functional foot. I put the teacup Susan gave me to my lips. I forced myself to sip. My throat closed. I choked. Tea splattered across the bed covers in my tray. Susan sighed. She mopped up the spilled tea, then motioned for one of the nurses that was putting up the blackout to come take away my tray. Since the start of the war, we covered our windows with blackout screens every night so that German bombers wouldn't be able to aim at our lights. My hospital wasn't in London, which was getting bombed every night right now. But that didn't mean it wouldn't be it. You never could tell what Germans would do.
Letter for your mum,
the nurse said, handing Susan an envelope. She scooped up the tray.
Delivered to the hospital? How odd.
Susan opened it. It's from Lady Thornton. She unfolded the letter inside. She must have sent it before she got my note with the boarding house's address.
Ada, are you quite sure you don't want something to eat?
Toast? I shook my head. The mouthful of tea I'd swallowed swirled in my stomach. I think I'm going to be sick.
Susan gasped.
She looked up at me, snatched a basin from the bottom shelf of my bedside table, and thrust it beneath my chin. I clenched my teeth and held everything in. Susan's hand shook. The basin shook too. I looked at her face. She'd gone pale, her eyes dark and wide.
What's wrong?
I asked. What does that letter say?
Nothing, she said. Breathe deep, that's it.
She put the basin down, folded Lady Thornton's letter, and tucked it into her handbag. Something was wrong. I could see it on her face.
Is it butter? I asked.
What?
Has something happened to Butter?
Butter was Susan's pony. I loved him. He was staying in Lady Thornton's stables while I was in hospital.
Oh, Susan said, no. That is, Lady Thornton didn't mention Butter, but she would have if anything were wrong.
Maggie? Maggie was Lady Thornton's daughter, my best friend.
Maggie's fine, Susan said.
Her hand still shook, very slightly. Her eyes didn't look right.
Everyone's fine in Village.
And Jamie's fine, I said. It was a statement, not a question, because it had to be true. My brother Jamie wasn't in the Village. He was here with us. Susan and Jamie and Bovril, Jamie's cat, were staying in a rented house in a boarding house near the hospital. Jamie was there with the landlady now. Jamie was 6 years old. We'd guessed he was 7, but we had his birth certificate now, and he wasn't. Not quite. I was 11. I had my birth certificate, too. I'd known my real birthday for just over a week.
Susan nodded. Jamie's fine.
I took a deep breath. Is something stopping my surgery? Before last week, when Mam tried to snatch us away from her, Susan had said she couldn't give permission for me to have surgery. She still couldn't give permission, but she didn't care anymore. She said that what was right and what was permitted were sometimes different things. I needed surgery, and I was going to have it. I didn't ask questions. Susan smoothed my hair back from my forehead. I pulled away.
I won't let anything stop your surgery, she said.
There was still something off about her voice and expression. I knew it had to do with Lady Thornton's letter. Lady Thornton could upset just about anyone. When I first met her, before I knew her name, I called her the iron-faced woman. She was sharp like an axe. Lady Thornton couldn't meddle with us there. We lost everything inside Susan's house. But I still had Jamie, Susan, Bovril and Butter. And surgery tomorrow, it was more than enough. You can know things all you like, but that doesn't mean you believe them. A little over a year ago, I taught myself to walk in Mam's one-room London flat. I kept it secret, wiping up the blood before Mam came home every day. I'd only wanted to be able to leave the flat, not the sea, but learning to walk saved me. When Mam sent Jamie away from London with all the other kids, because of Hitler's bombs, I snuck out too. We ended up with Susan and Butter in a seaside village in Kent. Susan didn't want us then. We didn't want her either. But I wanted her pony. And Jamie and I both liked her food. And eventually we all three wanted to stay with each other. Of course that was when Mam showed up to take us back. Only a week ago, that was. Susan decided to fight for us. She followed us to London, which meant we were all away from Susan's house the night German bombers destroyed it entirely. So the worst thing, Mam's return, became the best thing, not dying from the bombs. Now everyone was acting like my surgery tomorrow would be the best thing ever, which made me worry it might turn out bad. Susan said it couldn't be bad. She said she hoped my foot would work properly after the surgery, but if it didn't, I would be fine. I was fine now and I would be fine afterward, no matter what. Maybe. Depending entirely on what you meant by fine. We were still in a war. The nurses claimed they'd be able to get all the patients into the basement quickly enough if the air raid sirens went off. They hadn't had to do it yet, so who knew if they really could. Susan leaned forward. She hugged me. It was awkward for both of us. I let out my breath. My stomach still churned. Don't worry, Susan said. We'll see you in the morning. Go to sleep. I couldn't sleep, but the night passed anyhow. In the morning, Susan held my hand while a nurse wheeled me my bed down the hall. We stopped outside a heavy white door. The nurse said to Susan, "This is as far as you can go." I hadn't realized Susan would have to leave me. I clung to her. What if it doesn't work? For a moment, her fingers tightened round me. "Courage," she said, "and let go." In the operating theatre, a man in a long gown held a mask in front of my face. "When I put this over your mouth," he said, "I want you to very slowly count to 10. Oh, you made it to 4 before I fell asleep. Coming out of the ether was harder. My right leg was pinned, trapped. I couldn't move. I broke into a sweat, struggling to pull myself free. I'd been caught in a bombing, buried in rubble. I couldn't move my leg. Then somehow I was trapped again in the dank cabinet beneath the sink in our old flat in London. Mam had locked me inside. The cockroaches. Shh, Susan's voice soft in my ear. Settle down, it's over, you're fine. I was not fine. Not in the cabinet, not with Mam. Someone pinned my arms, threw a blanket over and tucked it tightly round my sides. Open your eyes, Susan's voice said, still gentle. The surgery's over. I opened my eyes. Susan's face swam blurrily in front of me. You're safe, she said. I swallowed hard. I said, "Oh, lion, I'm not. I can't move my leg, my right leg, my clubfoot leg." "You haven't got a clubfoot," Susan said. "Not anymore." I woke properly in the middle of the night. Screams surrounded my bed. A dim light shone behind them. "Susan," I whispered. One of the night nurses came to my bedside. "Thirsty?" she asked. I nodded. She poured me water and I drank. "How badly does it hurt?" I couldn't move my right leg because the doctors had put a cast on it after the surgery. I remembered that now. Beneath the plaster, a strong, dull ache centered around my right ankle and poked toward my knee. "I don't know," I said. "It always hurts."
More than you can bear? I shook my head. I could bear almost anything. Finna smiled. That's right, she said. Your mother said you were a tough one. She handed me a pill. Swallow this. I said, she's not my mother. Thank God for that. I swallowed the pill and fell back asleep. When I opened my eyes again, Jamie's face was inches from mine. His hair looked like it hadn't been brushed in weeks. His eyes were red and swollen. He was crying. I pushed myself up in a panic. What's wrong? Jamie launched himself onto the bed. He banged into my chest. I winced. Easy, Susan said, pulling him back. Jamie burrowed against me. I put my arms around him and looked over his head to Susan. Tell me what's wrong, I said. It was in Lady Thornton's letter, Susan answered. I nodded. I knew that. Jamie said, our man's dead. You can know things all you like. That doesn't mean you believe them. Chapter 2. I knew my mother, ma'am, worked nights in a munitions factory in London. I knew bombs were falling on London now, every single night in fierce, horrendous waves. I knew the Germans targeted factories, especially munitions ones. I'd been caught in a bombing raid myself. Brick walls exploded above my head. Afterwards, shattered glass drifted across the streets like snow. So I knew ma'am could die. I just didn't believe it. Even despite all the bombs, I thought ma'am would live forever. I thought Jamie and I would never be free. I hugged Jamie. He sobbed. He thumped my cast again. I managed not to scream. Susan tucked the pillow between Jamie and my cast. She eased herself onto the corner of the bed. She rubbed Jamie's back. Is it real? I asked. It's real, she said. Really real? I'm sorry, Susan said. I said, are you sorry? Was I sorry? I suppose I was, maybe. My mother hated me. You'll never see us again, I'd said to her a week ago in London. She'd said back, is that a promise? Now it was. This isn't a happy ending, Susan said. It's not the worst possible ending, but it isn't happy, and I'm sorry for that. I am grateful to have an ending, though. Your mother can't hurt you any more. No. I don't know whether Mam and I could have had a happy ending. I always hoped so. Of course I did. She was my mother. But it was another thing I didn't fully believe. I turned to Jamie. Why are you sad? Mam hated us. She said so. Jamie sobbed harder. I loved her, he said. Jamie was nicer than me. He probably did love Mam. I didn't. I wished I did. I wish, like anything, she loved me. I looked at Susan again. How am I supposed to feel? A good daughter would feel sad, I supposed. But if Mam was dead, then I was no longer anyone's daughter. I wasn't sad. I wasn't happy. Or angry. Or anything. Susan's hand blasted mine over Jamie's narrow back. However you feel is fine. Is there a word for feeling nothing? Yes, Susan said. Stunned. I felt stunned when I first heard my mother died. I looked at her. When did your mam die? A few years ago, several months before Becky. Becky, Susan's very best friend, died of pneumonia 3 years before the war. I knew that. They had lived together. Susan's bombed house had belonged to Becky first, and it was Becky who gave Susan butter. Both deaths were hard. Susan said, my feelings about my mother's were more complicated. I let go of Susan's hand. How did Lady Thornton know about Mam? Before last week, we'd heard nothing from Mam for an entire year. Not one word, despite all the letters Susan and I wrote her, until she showed up in person and dragged me and Jamie back to London. I'd given the WVS your mother's new address, Susan said. One of the WVS groups in London contacted Lady Thornton. I suppose they're monitoring casualty lists. The WVS was a women's volunteer service. They did war work. Susan was part of our village's WVS. Lady Thornton was its head, which made her in charge of evacuees like Jamie and me. Susan reached for my hand again. I pulled it away. Jamie kept crying. I wanted to comfort him,
but my insides felt hollow. I didn't know what Jamie and I were, if Mum was dead. Could we still stay with Susan? Were we still evacuees? What happens next? I asked. Susan paused. I don't know, she said. I'll ask Lady Thornton about the arrangements. I blinked. My heart stuttered. It wasn't yet the answer I expected. It wasn't the answer I wanted. Arrangements. The word came ringed with worry. It arrived on a wave of panic. It felt to the pit of my stomach. When had I heard that word before? Susan didn't say, don't worry. She didn't say, of course you'll live with me. She didn't say, I'll make sure you're taken care of. She had said all those things the day she rescued us from Mam for the second time. The day her house was bombed, she said we'd stay together always. I believed her. Had she been lying? Or did everything change because Mam died? Is there a word that means children with dead parents? I asked. Susan swallowed. She said, orphans. Orphans. Jamie and I were orphans now, not evacuees. We won't stay under Lady Thornton's protection. Susan won't be able to keep us. Something different happened to orphans. Pain gripped my gut. It hurt worse than my foot ever had. I tightened my arms around Jamie. I would hang on to him no matter what. I would never let us be separated. I'll be walking soon, I said. I'll be very useful then. Susan blinked. Your recovery will take a few months, she said. You know that. I said, I'm very hard working. Yes, you are, Susan said, but you won't heal faster because of it. I don't know if you'll be allowed to leave the hospital, whatever else happens. Do I have to leave right away? This day grew worse and worse. No, of course not, Susan sounded distracted. I only mean for the funeral, if we have one, whatever we do. Funeral, another word I didn't understand. Even after a year of living with Susan, there were so many things I didn't understand. Mam hadn't been much for words, and there was a limit to how much I could teach myself, looking out the one window of our flat. Arrangements. Line up against the wall, Lady Thornton had said last September in a crisp, head of the WVS voice. We're going to make arrangements. We'd just come off the train that had evacuated us to the village from London. A whole herd of dirty, shabby children, and Jamie and me the most wretched looking of all. I was nearly done in from the effort of getting away. My club got oozing blood, and it hurt so badly my knee shook. The villagers filed past us, looking us up and down. No one wanted Jamie and me. I was back to that place now, only cleaner, and with my foot right in plaster. You better go, I said, turning my back on Susan. You'll need to start making arrangements. Chapter 3. At least when Mam locked me up, I'd been able to move round the room. Now I was trapped in a hospital bed, helpless, immobile, away from Jamie and Butter. I wouldn't have Butter if I had to leave Susan. Susan didn't love Butter, not the way I did. He was left over from Becky. Maybe Susan would let me borrow Butter. If I ended up somewhere, I could keep a pony. I was the one who took care of him. I put my hands over my face. Tears soaked my pillow. I tried not to make any noise. Probably Jamie could keep his cat. Barbara was a good mouser. Even Mam would have let Jamie keep a cat. I'm that sorry about your mother, one of the younger nurses whispered. She pulled my blankets over my shoulders. I didn't reply. Susan had tried to teach me manners, but I didn't know the manners for when people said they were sorry your horrible mother died. Is your father in the army? The nurse asked. I shook my head. He's dead, I whispered. A long time ago. Nothing to do with the war, I said. We're orphans now. The nurse looked stricken. You poor dear. I rolled over to face the wall. What happens to orphans? I asked her. Where do orphans live? In orphanages, I suppose, the nurse said. But surely your aunt. She isn't our aunt, I said. When Susan returned that afternoon, I pretended to be asleep. When she came back after tea time, she brought Jamie. She brought our book, too, The Swiss Family Robinson. The only book we had left. It had been inside our Anderson shelter when the bomb fell on our house. Nice to know the shelter saved something. Susan opened at the beginning. "For many days," she read, "we had been tempest-tossed." "No," I covered my ears with my hands. "Please, I don't want..." The Swiss family Robinson got shipwrecked onto a beautiful island where everything turned out splendid for them. Jamie loved the story. I had always disliked it. I hated it now. Jamie and I were shipwrecked, but we hadn't been rescued after all. We hadn't reached an island. We were still struggling not to drown in a storm-tossed sea. Susan closed the book. I held on to Jamie and wept. Days passed without arrangements. I asked the young nurse about orphanages. "Oh," she said, her face clouding. "I'm sure some of them are nice places nowadays. Nothing like how they used to be. I mean, you get enough to eat and all. Nobody starves." "Can I keep a pony?" I asked. "I wouldn't know about that," she said, which meant no. Every day, doctors poked and prodded my leg. They changed my cast for another cast that looked exactly the same as the first one. They wouldn't let me have crutches. They refused to let me out of bed. Susan visited every morning, her face gentle and sympathetic. She brought Jamie to see me every afternoon as soon as he got out of school. When we came to live with Susan, she gave me crutches. When Mom came back, she threw them away. That's how Jamie and I got caught outside in the London air raid. I couldn't move fast enough to find a shelter before the bombs came. We'd been on the street, cowering under the hail of bricks and glass. A night nurse shook me awake. "You're screaming," she said. "Stop!" I was shaken and drenched in sweat. "Bombs," I said. "A wall fell on my leg. I couldn't move." "It was a nightmare," she said. "Pull yourself together. You're frightening the younger ones." The nurse walked away. I stared at the ceiling. My heart raced. I had to pee, which meant calling the nurse and using a bedpan, which reminded me of Mam making me use a bucket in our old flat. I knew where a toilet was. I'd used it before my surgery. The ward was dark, but some light shone from the nurse's station in the hall. I sat up. I pulled the blankets and sheets away. I tapped the hard plaster of my cast. My foot scarcely hurt at all. I swung my legs to the ground. It would have been easier with crutches, but there were beds every few feet along the room. I steadied myself on the bedrolls and dragged my cast along the floor. It was hard work, but I was glad to be moving. I slid into the bathroom, used the toilet, and came out. I was halfway back down in the darkened ward when a voice behind me barked, "What on earth are you doing?" I jumped, startled. I lost my balance. I waved my arms in the air, fell against the nearest bed, and whacked its sleeping occupant, a small girl with a broken leg and traction. She screamed. I pushed myself sideways and fell. My right knee twisted. Pain shot through my ankle. I screamed too. The whole ward woke. Someone flung on the lights. A pair of nurses hoisted me back into my own bed. Others calmed and comforted the little girl. "As if you weren't old enough to know better," the head nurse hissed. "Waking everyone up with your own ruckus and taking such ridiculous risks. You'll be lucky if you haven't hurt your recovery. Wait until your mother hears." "She's not my mother." The head nurse didn't care. In the morning, the doctor said I didn't seem to have done myself harm. The nurse told Susan anyway. Susan wasn't happy. "I don't know what got into her," the nurse said. "I do," Susan replied to me. She said more softly, "I know it's difficult, but you must rest until you heal. If you get up again, they'll tie you to the bed." I shuddered. Then I saw what Susan was carrying. "You've another letter from Lady Thornton." My stomach lurched. There came the arrangements. Susan waited until the nurse walked away. Then she sat down on my bed. She looked unhappy. "I'm afraid it's hard news," she said. "I've been trying to think of a way to say this gently, but I haven't found one." She reached for my hand. I pulled it back. I thought I might stop breathing. "I had to stay with Jamie. Had to." "Your mother was cremated," Susan said. "It was because of the war, because there were so many victims at the factory, and because we didn't hear about her death in time to claim her body. Her ashes were put into a mass grave.
We won't be able to have a funeral. We won't be able to bury her, in London or in our village. I am so sorry.
I had absolutely no idea what she was talking about.
Ada, Susan said, are you okay?
I didn't know where to begin. The word funeral, cremated, her ashes. Someone was cleaning out Mam's grave. What did any of it mean?
But I do have a bit of good news, Susan continued. Katie Thornton's offered us the use of a cottage on her estate to live in. She says it's quite small, but mostly furnished.
I couldn't speak.
I didn't know what we were going to do, Susan said. The government will pay me damages for Becky's house, but they say it might take years. I haven't been able to find anything for rent in the village. She looked at me.
You're so quiet. I know it's a shock. What are you thinking?
When things were very bad, I could go away in my head to a place where no one could touch me. I went away to Butter's pasture, to galloping through the grain fields on butter.
Ada, Susan said.
She tapped my arm to bring me back. I took a deep breath.
When do we go to the orphanage?
What?
When do Jamie and I...
Oh, gosh, please, please let me stay with Jamie.
When do we go to the orphanage?
Orphanage? Susan looked as shocked as if I'd slapped her.
Ada, why on earth would you go to an orphanage?
I glared at her. Where are we going then?
Nowhere, Susan said. Nothing's changed. How could you possibly think?
Excuse me. It's your mother that's dead. I'm still here.
You said you had to make arrangements.
Funeral arrangements. I don't know what that means.
Susan went perfectly still.
Oh, she said, oh, for heaven's sake, you poor dear. You must have been in agony. Why didn't you say something?
You never wanted children. I said you said so. She had over and over when we first came.
And we aren't evacuees anymore. We're orphans. Lady Thornton's not in charge of us, and neither are you. And the orphanage won't let me keep butter.
Oh, Ada.
Susan leaned forward and wrapped her arms around me. I tried to push her away, but she held tight. She was stronger than she looked.
You misunderstood, she said gently. You are orphans, technically at least, but of course you're staying with me. In some ways it's simpler now that your mother's dead. I shouldn't have any trouble becoming your legal guardian.
When I said arrangements, I meant for your mother, for her remains.
I didn't know what remains meant. I could guess, but I was afraid to.
For her body, Susan said, only that. You and Jamie stay with me. I tried to speak, but no words came. I choked, and then I was sobbing, and Susan rocked me back and forth, as if I was a little baby. As if she loved me. As if she always had.